0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Neil Lennon's calling for more compassion to be shown to Lee Griffiths. Steven Gerrard gets set to mark 100 games in charge of Rangers. And could they face Liam Boyce on Sunday as the striker nears a move to Hearts? I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me tonight is Daryl Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans.
For the avoidance of any doubt, I believe Lee Griffiths was wrong to throw anything in the direction of a supporter at Kilmarnock. Even if the abuse he was taking was moronic and offensive, there's a line professional players cannot cross. Fans like the ones who targeted Griffiths are hypocrites. Mean-spirited, unrepentant, unthinking hypocrites. But players are bound by rules, no matter how unfair on them those rules might be. Griffiths can console himself with 2 goals in 2 games. Goals tend to be the best way of leaving the loud mouths speechless.
He's gone straight in, two-footed on the big talking point.
There, I don't really know
where we go from here. Daryl Broadfoot, it's good to have you along with us on a Friday night. And it's great to have a top flight Saturday back. We were starved for a few weeks of the top flight. We get a good midweek fixture card. And now it's back to the old Saturday at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, even Steven Gerrard said he was bored with some Scottish Cup action. So now we're back to business. And I think when you look at the fixtures that are ahead, given how tensions are starting to fray at the edges, I think now everybody realises it's game on again.
01419511025, that is the number you need. So let's hear from you. It's your chance to have your say on all the day's big talking points and all the weekend's fixtures as well. So don't hang about, get in touch with the guys, and you can tweet us as well at ClydeSSB. Lots to look forward to on the pitch this weekend. Hugh Keevans, any time Celtic or Rangers take a trip to Tynecastle always goes down as one of the standout fixtures in the Scottish football calendar. Even when Hearts aren't as good as they would like to be, there's still something special about games like that.
There's an obligation on Celtic's part to beat Ross County at home and take a 5-point lead. We know about Rangers' game in hand, but you take the 5-point lead and you hope it has some psychological bearing on Rangers at Tynecastle. I was very surprised by the Hearts result in midweek. I thought they would have kicked on from their Scottish Cup win, scoring 5 goals against Airdrie, but they didn't. Goalless in Dingwall, and they are still under heavy pressure. Rock bottom of the league. Big weekend for them and Rangers and Celtic and Ross County and anybody else you can mention.
Don't hang about then. It is 6:05. We're here until 8 o'clock, so plenty of time to get your calls in on 01419511025. And like we mentioned, if you would rather tweet your well wishes to Hugh Keevans or Daryl Broadfoot, you can do that at Clyde SSB. It is Friday. It is the eve of match day. Therefore, lots of managers doing their media conferences today. Let's hear from Neil Lennon. He wants Lee Griffiths' critics to start showing the Celtic striker some compassion. Griffiths has had time out over the last year to deal with his mental health problems. He's back in the team. 2 goals in 2 games. Lennon says it's time to back the player.
He's a natural goal scorer, and that's the hardest thing in the game today. So if he has his critics, and we all have our critics, you know, the best thing to do is to go out, play well for the team, score goals. You don't need to bite back. Just, you know, keep it in-house and, you know, be proud of yourself. I don't think he's done anything wrong to warrant, you know, controversy at the minute or back page headlines other than, you know, his goals. Yeah, he has a bit of fun maybe with a celebration here and there, but you know, I think I don't think there's any. You know, I'd be the first one to get on top of him if there was an act of ill discipline or something beyond appeal that, you know, did any damage to the reputation of the club. But I don't see that from him at the minute, and I think it's unfair.
When somebody throws something at, let's say, Borna Barisic at Easter Road on a Friday night, we leap to the defence of the player justifiably and say, no, no, you can't do that. A player is supposed to feel safe on the park. That's his workplace. When a player throws something in the general direction of fans, you can't have that. As I say, Lee Griffiths crossed the line. I have every admiration for him in the way that he has started his comeback, the goal against Partick Thistle, the goal against Kilmarnock. Every admiration for him and what he is doing on the park. But you cannot cross that line.
Having said that, though, surely there is a difference, because you mentioned the word safe there? I mean, you're not suggesting that the throwing of tape is endangering someone's safety, surely?
No. I'm talking about the principle of throwing anything in the direction of supporters. If Lee Griffiths wants to turn to the broadcast gantry and give Chris Boyd a bit of verbal, then fine. I've been a columnist. I've been shouted at by people that I have written about in my column. That's the way the game works.
I can't imagine you upsetting anyone. I know, if you say so.
It's difficult, I know, but that's okay. It's not okay to get involved with the fans. Although, I repeat, they are hypocrites because they give him all the abuse in the world, and the first time something happens, they're running looking for police or stewards, or they're hypocrites. But players cannot cross that line.
Is it a sign of where we're at, Daryl? Without getting too deep, I don't know if it's as a society, or maybe the heightened tensions of the way this title race is going. It seems like there's no middle ground. People from social media, people either want to paint Lee Griffiths out to be this completely innocent angel, or they want him locked up for throwing a bit of tape. Surely the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
It is, but if you live your life on social media, then there is no middle ground. And you touched on the tension, what's at stake for Rangers and Celtic. I think we all need to chill out a bit. And listen, the untimely death of the great Terry Jones, we're in danger of it becoming a Monty Python sketch. There's Lee Griffiths. He was the Messiah. He was just a naughty boy.
Yeah, and that's it, Hugh, that whilst not even passing any judgment on whether it's right or wrong, we're now in a stage where you're actually having to ask for different views of the tape throwing incident to see if indeed there was a bin in front of said supporter, to see if the tape was getting thrown at a bin or not. You know, this stuff is getting, it seems like it's blowing up.
You know, the other thing you get is, if it had been Alfredo Morelos, I said when Alfredo Morelos made his gesture at Celtic Park, taking his hand across his throat, I said at the time, daft. He was daft at Motherwell when he made another gesture to the Motherwell fans and he got a booking. He was daft at Celtic Park and he got another booking. That, for me, is the end of the matter. He was daft. And Lee Griffiths was daft to throw anything in the general direction of a fan. But
the UN have a phrase for those kind of political tensions that they have, de-escalation. Mm. We need a bit of de-escalation in Scottish football, and in particular the title race. Hugh's right about the whataboutery, but the reality, as you said, Gordon, is always something different. There are shades of grey. And unfortunately, or fortunately, we have a title race that makes people lose their composure. Whether it's Chris Boyd, who post Kilmarnock has become a Chris Sutton clone, everybody just feels the need to ramp it up. And that's why I say from the top end, de-escalation will help. We've got an opportunity this season for the world to see a title race like no other, to see the best elements of Scottish football. We've also got an opportunity, if we're not careful, everybody see it at its worst. So the responsibility is on everyone. And you take the Lee Griffiths situation in isolation. It was naughty, it was naive. Should he do it? No. Was there huge mitigation and encouragement to do it? Yes.
01419511025. David's in Wishaw first up. Hi, David.
Hi, Duncan. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, guys. Hugh, I'm not on to have a go at you. I've got total respect for you, sir.
Next caller.
No, I have. But what I mean, where do you go? I mean, Lee Griffiths carry on, right? I'm one of these kind of guys that... see, Lee Griffiths, okay, they must have said something to him to provoke him. So he's been over the line, right? But what I don't agree with is, why are these people not picked out of the crowd by the security? I mean, I don't know where we go from here. But to me, if somebody's getting pounded like that, now Lee Griffiths and the other players, he must have been really, really provoked. Somebody's hearing this. Somebody's hearing it, and that's why Lee Griffiths done that. I mean, he's trying to put his career back online, and he's getting this in the back of the net because he's scoring goals or whatever. Now, Hugh, where do we go then?
I agree with you. If people are, heaven knows the cost of policing and stewarding when Celtic and Rangers play away from home must be horrendous. Now, time for the stewards and the police to go to work then and earn their money. If you can clearly hear and see a supporter mouthing unacceptable abuse at a player, be it Alfredo Morelos, Lee Griffiths or anyone else, yeah, you're right. someone should come in, step in and escort the gentleman from the ground. I agree, but I go back to it. Until such time as that happens, in the meantime, you can't have players aiming anything at supporters. It's unfair. They can do what they like without punishment. Lee Griffiths might, he may not, but he might receive a punishment for this. I know it's unfair, but you can't cross that line.
And that's the thing, Darla. I don't think anyone would actually argue with what David says. I can almost hear our esteemed colleague Fraser Wishart shouting at his radio somewhere. This is a place of work for these players. And the serious examples, the extreme examples, is the throwing of objects. But there's a lot more to it. The stuff that gets shouted at footballers in their place of work is often completely unacceptable. No one would argue against that.
Listen, verbal abuse is abuse nonetheless. And the fact that even some of the footage, you see Craig Gordon, the most mild-mannered individual you could ever wish to meet, was so upset that he had to go and confront, try and defuse the situation. The sad reality is they're called professional footballers for a reason. They have to be professional at all times, regardless of some of the provocation that is unacceptable. You talked about the extreme level of it, whether it's lighters, Buckfast bottles, coins. These people should be locked up.
Yes.
No doubt about it. In any other walk of life, in any other, locked up, and that's mercifully what's happening with the police. When a player reacts, it's almost going back to playground. Who hit who first? It doesn't matter. You have to take the high ground. And unfortunately, that's what's happened to Lee Griffiths. I think he's gotten his frustration, having waited to get his chance, scored two goals in two games.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we're spending more time at the top of the show talking about tape on a sock than two goals in two games ahead of a big Scotland game and Celtic's title.
Just get them picked out by security police and just show them the road and just ban them for the past.
And they will do that. I think if the individual is easily identifiable, the extent of the verbal abuse, you've got football banning orders, you've got season ticket allocations that you can identify seats. That person, whether it's a short term ban or a long term ban, should sit it out.
But this is the problem, and this is not to belittle anything that might have been shouted. It probably was over the top. I'm just saying it because I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't hear it. What are you asking stewards to do? Are you asking them to quickly take in every single word that's been shouted, analyse it, judge whether it's worth getting chucked out for? You know, when you throw an object, it's obvious. You've crossed a line, you go. But if you're to start throwing people out for shouting things that aren't very nice towards footballers, we could have empty stands. And that's not me saying it's okay.
No.
It has to be proportionate again.
It's a lot more difficult to police, surely. And
stewards are just that, part-time stewards. They are not psychology graduates. But you can tell when it is obviously abusive, offensive. You can tell.
And an isolated incident with one person, not dozens of fans, where you have to rely on CCTV footage. It was easy enough to identify the person. What the club will no doubt do is investigate, work out what was said, take some statements from Celtic, and I would fully expect the supporter to be punished. But whatever that punishment is, will be proportionate on, as you say, the abuse.
And the thing is, which we don't know. That can obviously only happen after the event, and therefore the onus is still surely on Lee Griffiths to just block it out. Because if someone does something and they cross a line and they're to be punished, but the punishment obviously comes later.
It's easy for us to sit here and go, you turn a blind eye, you use your professionalism, you don't do it. The same conversations have been had all season with Alfredo Morelos. You have to just be professional, you have to block it. Some people are more volatile than others. Some people have had more pent up frustration than others. Not everybody has the same level of decorum. So on both sides there was wrong. Lee Griffiths, in retrospect, wouldn't have thrown it, but consider there was sufficient provocation to do it.
There are other footballing matters out there. Jeremy Frimpong's out of the game against Ross County after being stretchered off at Kilmarnock. Neil Lennon's hopeful Alan Powers' challenge hasn't done too much damage.
He's had a scan, we're just waiting on the results of that, but we don't think it's as bad as what we first anticipated. So he's up walking about on it, which is good, but there's a little bit of soreness there. So, you know, don't know what the complete diagnosis is just yet. I thought it was overly aggressive and, you know, could easily have been a red card. You know, seen red cards given for that. So we'll hopefully get him back. He's desperate to get back and play as quickly as possible. He felt very aggrieved afterwards. obviously it was very near the end of the game, but it's part of the game. But yeah, I mean, he's that type of personality that, you know, we'll see him sooner rather than later.
I mean, we looked back on the tackle last night, Hugh. I don't think it's the type of tackle we need to spend a second night analysing. The guys in the studio thought, I think they both said probably a yellow for them, but you know, obviously under the current rules, you can kind of understand the call for more. The important thing now is that Jeremy Frimpong is out tomorrow, and Celtic need to replace him.
Yeah, here's another side to a football player's mindset. I'm 3-1 down. I'm absolutely disgusted. I think I'll just take this wee guy out. And that was Alan Power, the tackle of a bearded man with lots of tattoos. Thankfully, Jeremy Frimpong is not badly hurt. Thankfully, Christopher Eyre wasn't badly hurt earlier in the season when Sam Cosgrove's frustration got the better of him at Celtic Park. But it's just the other side of a player's nature. I'm disgusted. I'm going to take out this wee guy.
Yeah, and is it serious foul play? Was it using excessive force or brutality to give the laws of the game definition? I don't think so, personally.
Yellow card.
But as Neil Lennon said, you have seen them. Just because you've seen them doesn't make the case that referees have made the right decision all the time. I think a yellow card was merited.
0141 951 1025. I think we can squeeze one more in before the travel. Gavin is in Thornleybank. Hi, Gavin.
Hi, it was just a comment on sort of the Lee Griffiths thing. Mm-hmm. When you're all talking about de-escalating the situation, I'm all for de-escalating the situation, but to my mind, when you look at the actual incident, Lee Griffiths throws his tape in a bin. I don't see the problem in a player walking off, takes off his tape and it throws in the bin. The footage is really clear. It's not thrown at a fan. It's thrown at the bin behind the dugouts. It's where the dustbins are kept in Kilmarnock.
I mean, this is the thing. I couldn't, with any degree of certainty at the moment, disagree with Gavin. I haven't visited the stand. I don't know where that bin is, and this sort of brings us back to
this is forensic evidence on a Johnny Cochran level here. I have no idea where the bins are. I am only going on the television footage I have seen. He appears. You listen to me, Gavin. He appears to throw it in the direction of the fans.
And if he did throw it in a bin, then a career with the Glasgow Rocks beckons after he retires from football.
Yeah. I mean, Gavin, I can't believe we're now moving aside bins and analysing body language and all the rest of it. Would you not concede that he still at least didn't have to sort of go back and go over into that direction? Or are you convinced it was purely him looking after the environment and sticking it in the bin?
He's going in the direction of where he's got to sit. That's where he's sitting. He throws it in the bin and sits down. No, I mean, what do you want him to do?
No, he throws it well away from where he's sitting.
No, he doesn't. I have every
sympathy with Lee Griffiths, and I've already said the fans who were shouting that level of abuse at him are moronic. But you're concocting a version of events here that Neil Lennon hasn't mentioned, Scott Brown didn't mention in a lengthy press conference yesterday. Let's just accept what happened. It was a frustrated player fed up with moronic abuse who did what he did. And we have sympathy for him, and we are agreeing that he was more sinned against than sinner. But let's not.
But you also don't think he should have done it, and you think
here.
He was wrong.
Yeah, I go back. The only phrase I can use: he crossed a line you cannot cross.
I think the only way to solve this during the travel, if someone from Kilmarnock can get me the building plans, a diagram, point out where the bins are, where Lee Griffiths' seat was.
Was it the right bin? Was it the recycling bin?
We'll try and figure it out during the travel with Stephen. Then we're going to hear from Stephen Gerrard. So Rangers fans, very keen to get your take on this. I don't know if you knew, but Sunday we'll see his 100th game in charge of Rangers. So what does the report card look like for that first 100 games? You tell us.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
It's Hugh Keevans and Daryl Broadfoot here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Still plenty of time for you to get your calls in on 01419511025. And we are on Twitter as well, at Clyde SSB. We're going to hear from Stephen Gerrard. Rangers fans, you probably did know this, but if you didn't, 100th game in charge of the club on Sunday. How would you assess that time so far? Seems like a nice round landmark figure to look back on. What do you make of it so far? Going to Tynecastle, of course. Let's hear what he had to say. He's reflecting reflecting on that time. He says he's enjoying it. He thinks it's an all-consuming task, but something that he is thoroughly enjoying.
It's been a journey that I've thoroughly enjoyed from a personal point of view. Massive job, massive club. Really enjoyed the ride so far. Been a lot of ups, been some downs. Exactly what I expected, but I'm sitting here just as I was on day one, as hungry and as ambitious as I was when I first done my first media press conference, and hopefully I'm still around for the next 100. I'd like to think I've grown. I'd like to think I've tried to learn from the mistakes I've made. I'd like to think I've done some things okay along the journey as well. I believe there's still more to come from this team and these players. I'm still relatively young and inexperienced. I think people who said I lack experience and I didn't have experience, that was right. There's only one way to get it, and that's to, you know, get in there and face the experiences and face the challenges. It's a job that, you know, your phone and your work goes round the clock, sometimes through the morning, late at night. Maybe that's one part of it that has surprised me and shocked me a bit, that you don't get away from it. It's difficult to switch off, even on an international break or a winter break. You're constantly either on the phone or you're constantly checking up on your players, how they are, where they are. It's a job that goes round the clock, and a certain Jürgen Klopp warned me about that, and he was very right. We've had success in terms of European qualification and progressing, which is a massive achievement from where the club was. But I know, and you know, that you get judged at this club of trophies. That hasn't changed. Before the ball was kicked, I knew what I was signing up for and what the pressure would be on me. That hasn't changed going into the next 100.
Well, 100 games. First of all, congratulations to Steven Gerrard. He has brought two things, I think, to Rangers. Respectability. And I say respectability because Rangers had gone, through their own fault, to the lower reaches of Scottish football, and then on the way back up made questionable managerial appointments like Mark Warburton and certainly Pedro Caixinha. And you had the farcical moment in Luxembourg when Pedro was rubbery in the shrubbery. And now Steven Gerrard comes in to give Rangers respectability. Also credibility, because over the course of those 100 games, and I know the Celtic fans are shouting at the radio now, he hasn't won anything yet. I am very well aware of that.
He said it himself, didn't he?
However, he has brought back credibility, because this is a team who, if they keep on winning, have that game in hand up their sleeve, which could give them the whip hand in the latter stages of the championship race. So yes, he's still to win a trophy. Has he taken Rangers to the verge of something? Yes, he has.
Fewer clouds than what he inherited, but ultimately it comes down to the silver lining. Will Rangers fans accept another trophyless season? I don't think so, given the enthusiasm that they have over this current season and where Rangers find themselves in. You look at it statistically, goals per game, points per game, up, goals conceded, down. So the manager has managed to improve on last season's team. In Morelos, he has a match winner. But I think he's actually gotten a system now that suits Rangers, a better balance in the middle of the field. And bear in mind, when he arrived, a lot of people rightly had said, this is another gamble.
Yeah.
For all the Hollywood box office that he brings, he was the Liverpool under-19 manager. And now, in his own development, it's a different manager. A manager who built on last season, who carries himself with authority now. The players respond to him. And I might be putting my neck on the line, but I cannot see Rangers or Celtic losing a league game between now and the next Old Firm match. That is just how tight things are. And I think both teams are now, even if they're not playing well, as you saw, especially from Rangers during the week, they grind out victories. And I see that going until both teams meet again.
Graham is a Rangers fan from Irvine. How would you assess that first 100 games, or well, it's 99 at the moment, Graham, but what do you make of him so far?
How's it doing, guys?
Good, Graham.
Evening.
Yep. I'd assess it. Progress has been made. It's better than what it's been in the past couple of years, but I've been the last three home games there, Kilmarnock, Stranraer, and Wednesday night there against St Mirren. It was dire, but I think the other teams in the SPL have got a lot to play in this as well. They sit and defend, and that's all they want to do.
But that's none of your business. You have to overcome that. You know, if they go there and park several buses, that's something you just have to overcome.
I totally agree with you. Rangers should have players there own the money their own better to overcome that. But it is boring from a fan's perspective.
But you know, Jim Goodwin or whoever is not there to entertain Rangers fans. He's there to get the best possible result for St Mirren. So you just have to put up with that.
It was 67 minutes on Wednesday night, and their goalkeeper had the bye kick. They're 1-0 done, and he's time wasting. How's that any good for St Mirren?
Yeah, well, if he feels it's doing them a favour, that's up to him.
How can it be doing them a favour if they're getting beat 1-0? Tell me.
Listen, the bottom line is, it doesn't matter to Rangers whether they win with style or anything else, so long as they win. All that matters to Steven Gerrard is equaling or bettering any result that Celtic get between now and the end of the season. He's got a game in hand, up his sleeve, and he's got two matches against Celtic to negotiate as well.
This 100% agree with that, too.
This old chestnut about they came there and they were boring, that's their problem. That's not your problem. Your problem is trying to overcome a boring team.
Perversely, it's a sign of Rangers' progress as well, because those were the types of games last season, and certainly the season before, St Mirren's, St Johnston's, that they were tripping up. Kilmarnock.
Yeah.
But now there's a bit of a juggernaut. The reality is Celtic and Rangers have improved, while the rest of the league, with the honourable exception of Motherwell, have regressed. You look at the points difference, 13 points separating second from third.
Oh.
So Rangers and Celtic are setting off a nuclear arms race, and nobody wants to give an inch. The reality is, any other team put in their way realises that resistance will ultimately be futile.
You remember the great quote of our old pal Bobby Williamson when he was the Kilmarnock manager? He said, if you want entertainment, go to the pictures. You know, so he was there to do his best for Kilmarnock. Jim Goodman was there to do his best for St Mirren.
Can I come back in?
Of course you can.
My second point is about obviously the upcoming game on Sunday against Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Having watched Flanagan play it right back on Wednesday night, which arguably is his best position, should he be playing instead of the boy Patterson?
I think it's horses for courses, depending on the nature of the fixture. Nathan Patterson can be used in certain games, but he is very young, very inexperienced. Flanagan has loads of experience. Steven Gerrard will know when to use one and when to use the other,
and he'll probably take the view that now is not the time for experimentation.
Correct. Do you think a trick was missed then on Wednesday, Graham? Because the logic surely would be that if Nathan Patterson had any chance of playing at Tynecastle, he would have played against St Mirren first. So the fact that he hasn't, would that make his inclusion on Sunday unlikely?
So as I said, I was at the game on the Friday night against Stranraer, and I expected St Mirren just to set up the way Stranraer did. Patterson that night was the only one I gave pass marks to on Friday night. So to me, he should have played on Wednesday just to see how he played against a kind of better opposition, and to see if he was nearly ready for Sunday. I'm not saying he's ready, he might not be ready, but
young guys like Aaron Hickey in the Hearts team, for example, and Hearts stuck him into your cup final against Celtic. Now, Aaron Hickey has gone on from strength to strength. Nathan Patterson may very well be able to do the same thing. It's up to Steven Gerrard to gauge the mood in the moment at Tynecastle on Sunday, but it's certainly, although Hearts are poor and bottom of the league, it's not one where you'd be inclined to take a gamble.
This is also the point where a manager is as much a psychologist as he is a manager. If you throw in young Nathan Patterson, what message does that send to one of your experienced players, John Flanagan, who's come up with aspirations of starting, who is now the backup fullback, whether it's left side or right side? If you put the young player in and it doesn't work out, you've potentially lost two players. Patterson, who might not have been ready for it, and Flanagan, who now realises that he's third or fourth choice.
Okay, thank you very much to Graham and Irvine. Some decent points. Steven Gerrard is telling Rangers fans to expect news on Jermaine Defoe's future in the next couple of days. He is expected to sign a permanent deal at Ibrox. His Bournemouth contract ends in the summer, if you remember. Steven Gerrard says he is crucial to the club.
He's so important to the team and the squad. He's so important to the club because the way he behaves on and off the pitch. Typical Defoe goal. the other night, where he's in the right place at the right time and gets, you know, he's the quickest to react. And that's not luck or fluke. He's been doing that over the past couple of decades. I think he's absolutely fantastic for the likes of Joe and Glenn Kamara, the younger lads in the group, someone to aspire to and look up to. He plays a pivotal part on and off the pitch, so it's massive. And I'm so happy that in a couple of days or a day or two, we'll get some good news on that.
Martin, you're a Rangers fan. As Stephen Gerrard was addressing you there, essentially, he says to expect news on Jermaine Defoe's future in the next couple of days. Is that music to your ears?
Yeah, I'm more than happy for Jermaine Defoe to sign on a full-time basis. I think I've seen some interviews that he seems to love the club, love what we're all about, wants to be part of a potential title winning side. I'm more than happy for him today.
What about the bigger picture of this 100th game in charge for Stephen Gerrard? How do you feel about the time at the club so far?
It's kind of hard. Without trophies, it's hard to pick out points. I mean, sure, apart from Old Firm victory, just a natural progression of the team, I think. Overall, you can see that we are a much better together group as a team. We're only going in the right direction, and hopefully, at the end of the season, he'll have a trophy under his belt, his first trophy as a manager under his belt.
I think we go back again to where Rangers were 18 months ago, what Stephen Gerrard inherited. Rangers were a soft touch. They were Celtic's plaything. I don't need to remind Martin of the indignities that Rangers suffered at Celtic's hands over 2-3 year period. But Stephen Gerrard has brought credibility and respectability and a team who, you could argue, may have got the measure of Celtic now and may be able to use those two games against Celtic to win the first league title for a decade. That's how much Stephen Gerrard has done over the last year and a half.
Yeah, there are no secrets here, Daryl. Everyone knows. Stephen Gerrard himself said, as clear as day in the interview, you're judged in trophies. He doesn't have one yet, and we can't find out if he gets one until May. But is it more the trajectory, if you like, that is going to impress the Rangers fans? He turns up to find a team which can't get into Europe. Does that? A team which can't even finish second gets second. And everything's narrowing down. You then start chalking off wins against Celtic, wins at Celtic Park, things like that.
All of which will be absolutely futile,
sure,
if there's no silverware at the end,
yeah,
of the
but
season.
Like, sure, but, yeah, yeah.
So you touched on the St Mirren game that, yeah, the trajectory, the consistency, the fact that a Rangers team now looks as if it can grind out a result as well as win emphatically, all that will matter not a jot to fans in the cold light of day if Celtic's experience, and I heard Gordon Strachan reference the point again, Celtic's experience of digging out in the second half of a season, if that prevails. Rangers have themselves in the box seat with a game in hand, assuming that they win it, but for all the upward trajectory, for all the deserved plaudits, it will count for nothing if there's no tangible success. And there's also a cautionary tale as well. Jermaine Defoe, I think, is essential for no other reason than if you take either Morelos or Defoe out of the equation, there's no other strikers.
Yeah. Well, that's why the talk of Sevilla and Morelos is patently nonsense, because no Alfredo Morelos, no title for Rangers. No title for Rangers, much unhappiness, which would reach Stephen Gerrard's door. So, at the moment, he's got Morelos, he's got Defoe, he's got Rangers' back credibility and respectability on the park, and he'll celebrate his 100th game, I suspect, by proving all of that against a team at the bottom of the league.
Do you still see Tynecastle as a tricky venue, as it has the reputation, Martin, or do Hart's current struggles fill you with a bit more confidence this time?
No, I'm confident. I don't think Tynecastle is the way it used to be. I know the old saying that players and teams up their game against the Old Firm, but to be honest with you, recently, for both Rangers and Celtic, bar a couple of exceptions, that is a myth now. It doesn't happen anymore.
The cautionary tale, Hearts and Rangers
fans,
even
the last visit there,
Rangers fans are right to be confident, but complacency works off the field as much as it works on the field. Mm. Hearts, as much as it hasn't been pretty, are now unbeaten in 2020. So they've obviously solidified. They've got an important players back. Suter's back. Halkett's fit again. Naismith fit. He's managed to get a tune out of Sean Clare as a right back, and who'd have thought that? The challenge is, can they live up to Rangers' capabilities? I don't think so. But it won't be as easy as, say, it was earlier in the season. I think it was November and December's game, including the League Cup. Eight goals with zero in reply. So that shows the gulf. The gulf has narrowed, but I don't think it's closed to the point where Hearts have any real aspirations of holding Rangers.
You're a good man, Martin. Thank you for your call tonight. This is the ideal time to get your thoughts across, because we're going to get some travel with Stephen, and then we could be speaking to you next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Daryl Broadfoot is here. Hugh Keevans is alongside him, and they're taking your calls until 8 o'clock tonight. We are on Twitter as well at Clyde SSB. Lots of people are unhappy with you, Hugh.
No.
I can say that every night, though, let's be honest. Lewis is on. He says you're a hypocrite. He says Morelos is the bad guy for reacting at verbal abuse, but you've just said you've got sympathy for Lee Griffiths. We talk about lack of consistency with refs. Practice what you preach,
Lewis, my dear chap. Did you miss the bit where I said that Morelos was daft and Griffiths was daft? There's no interest in natural justice anymore. It's nothing but whataboutery. This has got nothing to do with Alfredo Morelos. This is a discussion about Lee Griffiths and what took place at Rugby Park. However, and I said at the very start of the programme, for the avoidance of doubt, I do believe he was wrong and he crossed a line you cannot cross. However, you've obviously just chosen to ignore the bit where I said Morelos was daft and Griffiths was daft. Goodbye.
It's the downside of an old firm title race. In fact, some people abuse you by saying it's the old firm title race.
Yeah.
But it's the downside of it that you get a nuclear arms race of mock indignation from people. Focus
so let's
on
just be
club.
Very clear. Was Lee Griffiths was wrong and crossed the line? That's your take on it, yes?
And has been consistently since 6 o'clock tonight.
Okay, I'm just trying to be clear. Just trying to make sure everyone is hearing you. Because you never know. Sometimes you can be distracted. You can be doing other things. And
yeah,
it's not easy. 01419511025. Alec is in Motherwell. Hi, Alec.
Hi Gordon, how you doing? Hugh, Daryl.
Hi Alec.
It was just Hugh, I'd like to ask, like, Hugh and Daryl, how significant do they think a team's result was up at Pittodrie the other night, like, psychologically and that for them? Did you think Motherwell could finish third in the league, Hugh? Well, possibly, I know they could finish third, but just to see what you think their chances are. And the same when in the cup, if they could get, do you think they could reach the cup final?
I thought the result at Pittodrie was outstanding. The important thing, as you will know yourself, Alec, is to follow that up with a win against Hibs. That's the only way you'll finish third and get into Europe and do all the good things. You have to do it on a consistent basis. I'm fed up saying how much I think Stephen Robinson is doing a magnificent job at Motherwell. But I'll say it again, outstanding job and a great result midweek. They've got to do it against Hibs. And can they reach the cup final? My answer to that is, why not?
Look, not only do I think Motherwell can finish third, I think they will. They've got momentum. They are almost the polar opposite of Hart's story so far. You look at Hart's wage bill, and I hate to go down to brass tacks about it, but Hart's wage bill means that they should be in the top four. Motherwell's wage bill means that they should aspire to somewhere in the region of top six, but realistically in that middle rump of the league. With a sound business model off the pitch, with an ethos on the pitch where it's a team effort. They have no singularly outstanding players or egos. From a PR point of view, because that's my life now, they're a dream to see. They push the boundaries, they're welcoming, the club's open, transparent, and I think a lot of neutral fans would only wish them well. I think they can. I think they're set up for a good cup run as well. The challenge is, can you maintain that momentum with a squad that's hardly overburdened? It's been a virtue because you get that close-knit feel about it, but, and we get into the January, February, March period where there's games, three games a week, then it becomes difficult.
The only negative I would introduce in terms of the cup, Alec, would be if Rangers and Celtic avoid each other in the draw, they'll play each other in the cup final.
Alec, I suppose, and I know every team can do this, Alec, every team's got regrets, every team will slip up at some point. In the quest for third, you look back in some, just one or two, there haven't been many, and that's why they're third. But the home defeat to Hamilton Accies, the home defeat to Ross County, the situation could very easily have, have been a lot more promising for you.
Oh, I can, Gordon. I know that. But every team somewhere along the line in the league throughout the season will slip up. I mean, even the big two, and it showed you that. But you just have to try and obviously win more than what you lose.
The question is, who's going to be the biggest threat?
Gordon, before I forget, Hugh, I was there. I don't know if you remember Saturday night. I phoned you. I was about the game up at Dens Park and that. And you know, I don't know if you remember, but I'm the taxi driver. But I would just like to offer you, Hugh, if Motherwell do get to the cup final, I can be your taxi home. I'll take you home free of charge.
Alec, that is the last thing he needs. He's just spent the last break pestering Daryl Broadfoot for a lift home. If it's not Daryl, it's Alex Ray or Mark Wilson or Craig Beattie or Fraser Wishart. Anyone who is going remotely towards Bears Den gets a lift.
Which I'm not, by the way.
But you're going to have to take him anyway.
It's on your way home. What are you talking about?
And all I'll say is, it's a great gesture from you, but even though he gets a free taxi ride home, don't expect a tip.
It was a nice gesture, Alec in Motherwell. Baz is a Rangers fan, but he's in the Netherlands. He's near Rotterdam. What's on your mind tonight, Baz?
All right, mate. I was just wondering regarding the comments about Steven Gerrard having to win silverware this season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Steven Gerrard's brought respect and decency back and brought Rangers back to the Rangers supporters. As long as we run Celtic close, then I would hate to think that if we lost the league by 2 points, we lost Steven Gerrard, because I don't think anybody else could stop 10 in a row.
Yeah, that's a fair point, Hugh, and this is why, like, but kind of going back to what we were saying earlier, we like to think things are black and white, but they're not. It's easy to say, you know, if Rangers lose the league, Steven Gerrard has failed, but there are degrees of losing the league. You can lose it in mid-April, or you can lose it on the last day by 2 goals. You know, Baz is trying to suggest that there could be a bit more to it.
I think perhaps if Baz lived in this city,
I don't think that's got anything to do with it.
I do think he would get the
I mean, he's not from the Netherlands. He just happens to be there.
I understand that. But as you walk about Glasgow, the Rangers fans are...
Do you walk about Glasgow? Is that wise?
Yeah, well, if you don't drive a car, you've got to walk. So the Rangers fans are, I would say, in a state of high anticipation. They really and truly believe that there will be no 9 in a row. I think I'm always told I don't speak for this club and that club, but I do think that 95% of the Rangers fans believe that 9 in a row will be stopped by Steven Gerrard's team this season. If it's not, disappointment will be huge. And then the question would be, if Steven Gerrard didn't stop 8 and he didn't stop 9, will Rangers risk seeing whether he can stop 10?
Final word to you, Baz. We're running a bit close to the news.
I would be absolutely gutted. I would be absolutely gutted if we don't stop 9, we tried to get somebody else in and started a new project, when the project we've got is taking steps forward every single time. We qualified for you. We qualified for the group stage of Europe. We qualified for the last 16. We were quite close to Celtic last year. Not close enough. This year we're right on them. And I am one of the 95% that do believe we might stop it. But if we don't, I certainly don't want to start again.
Listen, Rangers won't. You signed a new contract, but the question was, disappointment, would it be acceptable? I don't think another season without silverware, whether that's League or Cup, will be deemed acceptable or successful, Rangers.
Baz, some good points well made. We'll hopefully hear from you soon. But in the meantime, it's time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Beat the Pundit time. What a way to end your week. Not only with the signed ball, but with something money can't buy. The bragging rights. The chance to get victory over Hugh Keevans or Daryl Broadfoot. All you have to do is call us 0141 951 1025. And you have to make that call before the news at 7. Don't hang about.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans is here, Daryl Broadfoot is with them, and they're waiting on your calls. You have until 8 o'clock to get in touch with us tonight. Some big games across the weekend, it must be said. I know we have dedicated a lot of the first hour talking about Steven Gerrard, talking about Lee Griffiths and the sock tape throwing incident at Rugby Park. If you want to preview some of the games, we'll take that as well. 01419511025. But we will do this first.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Daryl Broadfoot and Hugh Keevans are both standing by. One of them will be playing Beat the Pundit this evening. Of course, that will depend on the toss of the coin. And you'll never believe who we've got on the phone tonight, Hugh Keevans. Oh. Honestly, you will never believe it. I'll give you a bit of a clue.
Andy
Williams on the phone. Well. A different one, I would assume. It's Andy in Bishopton. How are you, Andy?
I'm very good.
I bet you've never heard that before.
Oh, only every day.
I know, and I do feel slightly guilty for going for such a cliched joke. However, you're the first Beat the Pundit contestant who's ever had walk-on music, as far as I'm concerned, Andy. So you should be honoured, really.
Well, that'll be the best thing about it, to be fair.
Good man. I'm going to toss the coin and see who you're up against. If it's heads, it's Hugh Keevans. And if it's tails, it will be Daryl Broadfoot. And it is tails. It's Daryl against Andy Williams from Bishopton. So
the impossible dream.
Very good. I'm going to give Daryl some Clyde 2 to listen to, Andy. Might be one of your tunes on there. You never know. We'll give you 30 seconds, Andy. You're going to go head to head with Daryl. Now remember, Hugh Keevans is waving at me here. He's giving me hand signals. What's wrong with you? Are we not getting Clyde 2 yet? There we go. Producer Andy's on it. He does the things that I don't know how to handle. There we go. Right, so Daryl Broadfoot can't hear us anymore, Andy. You've got 30 seconds. You're going head to head. You can pass. Here is your chance to beat the pundit. You ready?
Yep.
Right, let's do it. Your time starts now.
You are the voice.
We're all over the place, Andy. I'm pressing the wrong buttons. Here we go. What international team does Martin Boyle represent?
Northern Ireland.
Name either side playing in the Scottish Championship this evening.
Thistle.
Paul Gascoigne joined Rangers from which club?
Spurs.
Hearts are hoping to sign Liam Boyce from which side?
Pass.
Which Aberdeen player has 60 caps with Northern Ireland?
Niall McGinn.
Who was the first non-Scottish manager of Celtic?
Martin O'Neill.
What is the name of Montrose's home ground?
Pass.
Okay, let's see if we can bring Daryl back. Daryl, can you hear us?
Oh yeah,
I was all over the place there. We're
Gene
pressing
Genie
the wrong
button.
Are you happy with that?
Happy.
I know you're a
delighted
big music man.
Delighted.
Yeah, okay. Right, same set of questions to you. Yes.
Yep.
Which national team does Martin Boyle represent?
Ireland.
Name either side playing in the Scottish Championship tonight.
Arbroath.
Paul Gascoigne joined Rangers from which club?
Lazio.
Hearts are hoping to sign Liam Boyce from which side?
Pass.
Which Aberdeen player has 60 caps with Northern Ireland?
Niall McGinn.
Who was the first non-Scottish manager of Celtic?
Non-Scottish. Wim Jansen.
What is the name of Montrose's home ground? Wow. I think the pressure got to you there.
Out. Panicked.
You
lack
did.
Of preparation, no pre-season. Wow.
Lynx Park.
Andy, I think you had him on the ropes.
Oh, I think he might have edged. I don't know.
Oh,
well, it wasn't a classic, right? I think we can agree on that. Which national team does Martin Boyle play for? Australia? No, ringing any bells, Daryl?
Yes,
and you used to work at the Scottish FA, and you know the Australia. Yeah, you see where I'm going.
Yeah.
Name either side playing in the Championship this evening, Hugh.
Dunfermline, Dundee.
Yeah, so none of you got that right. So it's 0-0 after two questions.
<It's a> classic.
Paul Gascoigne joined Rangers from Lazio. You did get up and running on that one. 1-0 to Daryl Broadfoot. Hearts are hoping to sign Liam Boyce from Burton Albion. So it's still 1-0 after four questions. Not to worry, Andy Williams. I always hate it when the contestant gets a zero. You did manage to get one. Niall McGinn has 60 caps with Northern Ireland. Unfortunately for you, Daryl got it as well. He's 2-1 in front. The first non-Scottish manager of Celtic. Hugh, would you? I told you they were both wrong.
Liam Brady.
It's Liam Brady. You both got it wrong. And the name of Montrose's home ground is Lynx Park. None of you got it. It was not a high scoring affair. It was 2 to Daryl and 1 to Andy Williams. Hard lines, Andy.
Andy, you were almost there.
Just as well, you can sing, Andy.
I know. I'll maybe leave it a few years again.
Good man. A couple of months should do it. It's not like everyone knows your full name, Andy Williams from Bishopton. A 2-1 win for Daryl Broad. I mean,
that doesn't count as a win, that, does it?
Well, you know, all week we've been hearing it's all about getting 3 points on the board and the performances don't matter. So
I've got 4 weeks to save my Clyde season.
Maybe we can apply that to you as well. Liam Brady, Burton Albion. Fermland Dundee. It kicks off. No, it's kicked off already, I think, actually. Well done, Fermland. Get two sides that could really be doing with a win in the championship tonight, Hugh.
I consulted Stephen Mill, who is Clyde's leading authority in all things Dunfermline, and I said, can you do it tonight? And he said, no.
We should point out I got it wrong even after having that conversation.
Yeah, yeah, you did. Yeah, that's true. Yep. Is he the only Dunfermline fan you know? Is that why you bring it up?
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to think if I knew any. Yeah, he's possibly the only one I know as well. Well, either the Dunfermline fans or the Dundee fans.
You know Mike
Hamlockovich? I know the name. Okay. Yeah, not personally.
Apart from Big Leash. Big Jim.
Well, anyway, it's Dunfermline v Dundee tonight in the championship. Will we get a winner? Both sides are looking for a victory. They could be doing with it. It's 01419511025 in the phones. It's at Clyde SSB on Twitter. It is still goalless in that game if you're interested. 3 minutes gone at East End Park. Dunfermline 0, Dundee 0. Let's just go straight back to the phones and speak to William, who is a Celtic fan from Craig End. What's on your mind tonight, William?
Hello, guys. How you doing? Good evening.
Thank you. Thanks.
Good. It's just a wee point about the title race. I've heard Darryl saying that Celtic and Rangers only won't lose, and I've heard Gordon saying they won't lose other games as well. I sort of disagree. I think there'll be more points dropped in this second half of the season. I think it's a bit unprecedented for the two teams to be so consistent, and two teams that are heading for 100 points. And I do think when you're playing teams three and four times a season, they'll get the better of you eventually, you know. They'll take points. I think they'll take points off you eventually, you know. And I do think that'll happen. I'm not saying one of them won't make to 100 points, but I just think it's got, even with the consistency, I think the winning the league. If you'd asked me at the start of the season, the Celtic got 96 points or 94 points, I'd have took your hand off for you. Because there are days, though.
I mean, when Celtic went to Livingston and lost 2-0, I mean, it was just a calamitous day for Celtic. Ryan Christie got sent off. Defensively, they fell apart. And Livy didn't win another game for 3 months. Yeah. That's how eccentric a result it was. So these days can come along. But Celtic and Rangers are so powerful, have such strength and depth, that the chances of those days coming along is now diminishing. So it might very well be the case that this league comes down to two games between Rangers and Celtic at Ibrox and the Celtic and Rangers at Celtic Park.
I just think they're now into such a laser focus that, well, there may be drawn matches. I cannot see either of them losing. And you look through the fixture schedule, even including the added onus of Europa League knockout stage. Motherwell versus Celtic in the back of three back-to-back away matches. That's the one game where you think Celtic might find it difficult. But I thought the same when Rangers played Motherwell in a 2-0 win. Aberdeen, we talked about Aberdeen off-air. There's this almost kind of cliche that Aberdeen's a difficult place for Celtic and Rangers too. The stats don't bear that out anymore. Aberdeen this season have regressed from last season. And likewise, you look at Rangers have had Motherwell this side of the Celtic match, and I just don't see either side letting up. I do the same at Liverpool. I thought against Wolves, it might have been the one game, the one where they're expected to win, and it just falls flat. Even in that environment against a resurgent Wolves team, they get a late winner. They are just absolutely relentless, and it's a credit to both Neil Lennon, who again, when he took over second time around, there were question marks from fans, media, and Stephen Gerrard, that there's now this juggernaut on both sides of the Glasgow divide.
William, and Gordon's not here. I think his line that he repeats quite often, it's not that he doesn't think any of them will drop points, but he doesn't think it'll happen at home. He thinks the only team capable of winning at Celtic Park is Rangers, and the only team capable of winning at Ibrox is Celtic. What, when you look at the fixtures coming up, William, the Celtic have the more difficult run, quite simply because most of theirs are away and most of Rangers' fixtures are at home in the coming weeks?
I think we've got St Johnstone and we've got Hamilton, which is usually a hard place to go, you know, but, and we've got Livingston coming up again, so obviously Livingston's going to be a hard game again, you know, and you've got Motherwell as well away. I think we've got Hibs away as well. I don't know, because a lot of Rangers fans are coming on and saying that that they hate the park the bus tactic, but I just think they will drop more points. I think they've dropped to 8-7 the first 20 games of the season. I think they'll drop more. I think they'll drop maybe 12. I would say about 12 points, and I don't think it'll come down to the two Glasgow derbies. I think there'll be points dropped. I think especially going into the split, and I think the Europa League as well. I think will have a lot to do with that as well. I think if you go deep into the Europa League, maybe last eight, last four, then.
And
if
Rangers and Celtic get to the last eight and last four, then Scottish football is the beneficiary of that, and then you have a real climax to the season. The point I was making was up to the next Rangers-Celtic game, the 15th of March. I cannot see...
How many games are there until then?
So you'll have, well, including the European games, you've got, what is it, 10?
Yeah, so you take them off, seven league games or something.
As you pointed out, Celtic got three away, Rangers got three at home. You talk about the importance of the European games. Rangers come off the back of Braga away and play Hamilton at home. You've then got Ross County away from home in March, which, while it won't be pretty, I can't see Ross County standing in the way of a title race between Rangers and Celtic. I just don't see an obvious opportunity, with the exception of the Motherwell game for Celtic, where there's a natural, this could be really tricky.
That's where it's credit to them both, Hugh. And of course, you can flip that in its head and say that some of our other bigger teams have regressed and they actually need to step up, and the strength throughout the league maybe isn't there. But credit where it's due to Stephen Gerrard, Neil Lennon, this idea of a European hangover, we always talk about it. They've been non-existent this season. You look at the fixtures following Europa League and they've dealt with them well.
I tend to think that if you are advancing in the tournament, then your self-esteem is growing all the while, and that will be reflected in your domestic performances. So the further they go in Europe, I don't see that as a complication. I see it as an incentive then to do well in Europe and domestically.
The number of games argument's a bit of a myth as well. You know, oh, they've played X number of games. I say, well, that's what good players do. Good players who are going through knockout rounds of the Europa League. I think Rangers and Celtic, Braga and Copenhagen, have two eminently winnable ties. But you're not telling me that the core of the Celtic team, the core of the Rangers team, don't look forward to game after game, because it prevents endless training drills. That training gets parked to a bare minimum. You're in this kind of relentless treadmill of matches, which will ultimately dictate which of the squads is strongest.
Just before we let you go, William, what are your current thoughts on the transfer window? We've got an update on Ismail Assoro from Neil Lennon today. He says they were hoping he would be here tomorrow, but there's been a hold up with the paperwork, so he'll hopefully be here early next week.
I hope it's not another Josh Cadet to carry on, you know. But anyway, I think I've had a wee look at him. He looks a real good player. I think sometimes Brown needs a wee bit extra help in the middle of the park. And I think the way they changed the system in the last game there, playing the 3-5-2, I think that gives more responsibility towards McGregor and Cham. So I'm quite happy. I mean, I'm quite happy. I'd like to see, there's obviously a few players I would still like to see in the team, but you can't pick them all. Celtic have got a great squad, you know, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Who would you like, just out of interest of that team, who would you like to see in it, and who would you have them at the expense of?
Who's that?
When you said there's other Celtic players you'd have liked to have seen in the team, which ones?
I think there's obvious ones like Taylor at left back. Changing the system is good. It's good to see Griffiths back and scoring goals again. That's what we need. We need that, you know. So,
I thought in my naivety that Celtic would sign players who you would more or less guarantee to make a contribution between now and the end of the championship race. We've yet to see what Patrick Klimala is capable of delivering, because he hasn't had many minutes on the park. I would expect him to get a decent run at it tomorrow against Ross County at some stage. With regard to Sorrow, I take it that this is an administrative business going on in Tel Aviv. And for younger listeners, I would tell you all about George Gaudetti, but it would take too long.
Let's not. I think the two signings will be future projects. I don't think Klimala, with the age, where he's at in his development, I don't think you can risk, nor will Neil Lennon want to risk, throwing him straight in there. Edward is your number one striker. If you play 3-5-2, clearly Lee Griffiths is your next in line. So in terms of strengthening, we had this conversation. Where do you strengthen and how do you get ready-made players for the starting 11, and where do you need them? Celtic, for as long as Edwards there, have their first choice striker. Rangers, for as long as Morelos is there, have their first choice striker. And I think it will come down to something as simple as the shootout between Odson Edward and Alfredo Morelos. Even the support acts, there's no longer the same volume of goals from the rest of the pitch. Ryan Christie is Celtic's kind of next in line, the attack-minded player. Arfield, not so much for Rangers this time around. They hope that Kent having brought him in, what's he got, 6-7 goals this season. It will come down to a shootout between the two strikers.
Thank you very much to William in Craigend. We'll leave that one there for now. It's 0141 951 1025. We are going to get the guys a full time teaser. I can tell you, you're only looking for 7 players tonight, so even you two will manage this before 8 o'clock. We are going back a bit on some of them. We've got Alec in Blantyre. He's a Rangers fan, but he's got a point to make about Scottish clubs in Europe, and we'll hear from him next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans is here. Daryl Broadfoot is alongside him tonight. And the two of them are going to have to show some teamwork here on the full-time teaser. Now, if you've never heard the full-time teaser before, it's a pretty simple concept. It doesn't take much explaining. You send the questions in to us and we test the pundits to see if they can come up with all the answers between now and 8 o'clock. So Stephen Balmer has sent tonight's in. Big thank you to Stephen. The address you need if you want to hear your question is fulltime@clyde1.com. Since 1980, Stephen says, 7 players have scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals. Can you name them? So since 1980, 7 players have scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals. One of these guys has done it twice, so there are more than 7 goals, but only 7 players
done it.
Extra time
since 1980. Okay.
I mean, I was hoping for a bit less silence right off the bat. If I'm being honest, since 1980, they're all going back a bit. There are not too many recent ones, so I don't mind steering you. And I'm sure Daryl will be looking to you, a more experienced head in the studio, Hugh. I think you will.
Starter for
would
10.
Would the late Ian Redford be there?
No.
Ian Ferguson?
Yes. Can you remember the game? That's just brownie points.
I think it was was it 87?
It was.
1987. I remember watching that in my living room. That's the first cup final I can genuinely remember as a kid.
Is that
the first one you remember? Yeah. I always say it every time that game comes up, that's the last final with all Scottish players on both sides. Yeah. Like that. Will we ever see it again?
Joe Doombay?
No.
No, that was a late goal, was it, rather than an extra
Ian Ferguson's
goal.
The only one.
Joe Miller?
I must say, just for the listeners, because they can't see these things because it's radio, I do love the difference between you two. We've got Daryl, you're fulfilling the sort of modern man role. Hugh is the elder statesman. You have your laptop in the studio. The pundits don't usually take it that seriously. You've got your laptop in the studio. Hugh Keevans has got his quill over there on the other side.
Parchment?
I'm just loving the difference between the two of you.
Stevie Kirk.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good shout. Yeah.
I'm glad you got that one. Okay, Stevie Kirk and Ian Ferguson, 2 down, 5 to go. We'll leave it there. You've got until just before 8 o'clock. Alec is in Blantyre. What's your point tonight, Alec?
Hi, just McGarvey, man. I was just listening there. Frank McGarvey, who's here. Kind of mind if that was the extra time.
Do you know what, Alec? It's a good job for you that's wrong, because you were getting cut off for giving one of the answers away if it was right, but it's not.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. On you go.
Evening, panel.
Hi. Evening.
I was listening to what you're saying, Model. Doing well. I love the Model fans in that talk away, and that seemed 4 points clear, but saying to them as well, the qualify for Europe, right? And don't think we could get papped to it in the first round, but Motherwell are they going to progress? They're all doing well, so we're going to qualify for Europe. Well, qualify for Europe for what? They're not actually going to progress. You know what I mean? So there's something going to be there. If it's not really for Rangers and Celtic this season for the coefficient, then I really don't see why you get excited to finish in third.
I think disrespect to
Wirral Aberdeen. I know that's why they're financial, they're struggling, but
I take your point.
I just don't see.
Yeah, I take your point, because we've had some pretty horrendous results. First of all, on the upside, if you qualify for Europe, it is reflective of having had a very good domestic season, and you're entitled to say, well done us for getting there. But yeah, by and large, the results outside of Celtic and Rangers, and indeed prior to this season, there were some pretty ropey results along the way for Celtic and Rangers as well. But Celtic and Rangers,
Kilmarnock, Alex said. But at the same time, though, surely finishing third is the achievement, and the qualification for Europe is just the reward that follows. If you're then unable to go as far as some people would want, that it doesn't mean there's no point in, you know, in finishing first.
You have Alan Burrows in here, and he will explain to the very penny what it means to Motherwell to finish third from SPFL distribution. So you get more money. I take your point. It's one of my bugbears that we've kind of resigned ourselves to Rangers and Celtic propping up the coefficient. As it happens, if Rangers and Celtic get beyond this round, we might find ourselves in position number 14, which means that from 2021 onwards, we'll have two teams in the Champions League. It's up to the rest to understand that there's a massive gap now, and they have to help bridge it. Aberdeen have been responsible for some of our most embarrassing results in Europe, just as they have been responsible for some of the greatest. Motherwell, you can go through all the clubs, culminating in Kilmarnock losing to Connachty Nomads.
See, just on that point, right, I know financially, right, and I've been watching games and watching the media, right, and I know it's been talked about in the media about, see, the crowds. I know St John's are going to give most fans to Rangers and Celtic for up and coming games. Surely drop the prices. I watched I'm a Rangers fan, but I watched the Celtic game, I watched it come on, the crowds are dwindling. They need to address that to try and get funds in.
The stats don't back that up. You know, the stats in general for Scottish football's flagship league are very good.
Per capita, one of the highest in Europe.
Yeah, so it's not dwindling. That is not accurate.
I think what often happens, and because everyone would like to see more, but I feel like TV coverage plays a lot into people's minds, because we see empty seats, and therefore we think terrible crowds, when in actual fact, the real problem probably is that most of our clubs have stadiums that are far too big for them, really.
Too big, and also football does have a challenge, short to medium term, in attracting younger people, to whom sitting doing anything for 90 minutes is anathema. They just want instant gratification on their mobile phone. Football has a job to do to make the spectacle, the 90 minute event, appeal. Otherwise it becomes a fully televisual experience.
We could do a full week on Alex's point about, you know, prices. I don't think you'll meet anyone who wouldn't love to lower prices. I think everyone agrees that just to the man in the street, it's just too expensive. You try and take a family along for a day, an afternoon out on a Saturday, it is extortion. Alec is bang on the money. The problem is, Hugh, there just isn't an easy fix.
I was listening to Man U against Wolves a couple of weeks ago, and I heard the commentator say that the Wolves fans in their segregated area of Old Trafford had been charged £65 a head. So there's always somebody worse off than yourself.
I don't think football generally in this country, and I give you the Scotland versus Israel prices, for example. You build it, they will come. That's heading towards a sellout. I don't think the prices generally are too expensive, but I think football collectively needs to give better value for money.
Yeah.
So rather than dropping the prices as just a sort of automatic solution, you think giving people more,
you will get this,
give people
you have
more
the
for
same,
the money.
You've got the same rump of fans who will come hell or high water. What you need to do is make the proposition more attractive.
But then we come back to the earlier caller who said that St Mirren by and large were a disgrace at Ibrox during the week, and there you have the dilemma. Yeah, Jim Goodman would like to entertain, but he knows he'll get a hiding at Ibrox if he tries to entertain. So he took the alternative option, which was to try and shut the door, and he very nearly got away with it.
Give you the final say, Alec.
Yeah, sure. Just a quick point, you know, making it up. I wasn't at the game, but speak to a friend that was at the game. Even, all right, it's quite entertaining. All right, but even when St Mirren went down 1-1, they still never changed their tactics. So, see, for if I was a St Mirren fan's point of view, that is the point. You've got to support a team, you know, you don't got to even try.
Well, I wasn't at the game, but I read in the match reports that 1-0, a couple of minutes to go, St Mirren had a chance and blew it. Now,
if
Jim Goodman gets a draw at Ibrox, he's doing cartwheels. So that's the way they approached it. And as I say, I do appreciate the dilemma there, that you're asking for more entertainment, but at the same time, clubs have their individual demands, and St Mirren's overriding demand is to stay in the division.
I think it was Brian Rice that said a few months ago the gulf between Celtic and Rangers and the rest is as big as he can remember. I can't quite remember what time frame he put on it, Darryl, but that was the gist of the statement. And maybe that's what we're seeing as well. As Hugh mentioned earlier, if you're Jim Goodwin or you're whoever, why on earth would you come and open up and play an expansive game at Ibrox or Celtic
There's
Park?
No point,
why would you?
Because
do
if you lose 4-5-0, the same fans who complain about the aesthetic will be wanting you out of a job because it was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
The reality is we now have two leagues. We have Rangers versus Celtic pursuing the championship, and we have a race to see if anybody can topple Motherwell in third place. That's the reality. Financially, on the field, results, attendance, you name it, by any measure, there are two divisions now. The challenge, if you look back to the European point, is can those teams understand what it's like, not just to be top three in Scotland, but understand that there's a gulf between top three in Scotland and mid-tier European club.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much to Alec in Blantyre, 01419511025. I think Dunfermline have just taken the lead against Dundee. Ryan Dow looks like he was the man who provided the finish. Only 28 minutes on the clock, and indeed the home side are leading. We mentioned before that both sides really could be doing with a victory, Hugh, and it's Dunfermline who've struck first. Well,
they've had a particularly long, disheartening run of defeats, and they've taken the lead against a Dundee side who are in danger of slipping out of contention for the playoff places, and that's bad news for James McPake, but it's a magnificent header to put Dunfermline in front.
No, well, this is what happens, Hugh. It's no surprise that the impact that you have on people. The cross was better than the header. It was from Dom Thomas, who was one of the extras in your Shaking Kevin's Christmas video. So you start rubbing shoulders with guys like you, you get inspired, you kick on and you achieve things. I think that's the...
I told them, stick with me, I'll take you all the way, kid.
It's a great league, that, as well. They were 4 points off bottom spot before kick-off, and they're now 5 points away from top two.
Was this not the very first fixture in the SPFL leagues this season? Did we not stand here on a Friday night at the start of it all? I think we did. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, that's the beauty of this show, but I'm sure we did. Anyway, right, on tonight's teaser, Stephen Balmer's asked you the question, and he's asked, can you name seven players who've scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals since 1980? Now, I did just see a tweet which had a decent go at it. Scotty McCoo went for Peter Lovenkrantz, but that was a 90th minute.
You say from 1980, so I assume, because I was only one at the time, that would have been an extra time goal. Otherwise, it would have started beyond it. So, Hugh,
you're
1980
a wise man.
Final.
1980 final was a penalty kick shootout between Celtic and Aberdeen.
Was it Celtic?
1980 was a riot. And the
of course.
Now, was the goal credited to George McCluskey or Danny McGrain?
Pick one.
McCluskey.
Yes. Well done. George McCluskey. You've got George McCluskey, Ian Ferguson, Stevie Kirk. Three down, four to go. We'll get them before the end. Paul is in Kirkintilloch. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Gordon. Hi, Hugh. Hi, Darryl.
Hello there.
Evening.
How are we doing? Looking forward to the game tomorrow. Actually looking forward to seeing Lee Griffiths. I had doubts, as I think most people did, that he was going to come back to any kind of form, but gradually, slowly, he seems to be getting there, and I'm delighted. I think that Lee Griffiths is at the right time where he needs the help. He's been with the right club. He's also been lucky. I think that it's Neil Lennon that's come in, who stood by him, where in the past Neil Lennon's had problems with mental health himself, and I think that I don't think it would have really done him any good. I don't think if he had left, it wouldn't have done us any good either. So I'm delighted he stayed. I hope he gets back. If he gets back to near his best, I think it'll be a massive asset. And I think him and Edward looked like they really enjoyed playing together that night.
Paul, what is the likelihood that they stay together? Is there a chance that as soon as James Forrest and Mohamed El Younoussi, for instance, get fit, that Neil Lennon changes back to the previously preferred shape, and actually you don't see them both?
Well, that's a hard one, Gordon. I'm a massive James Forrest fan. What you saw, El Yunusi, he's been really good, but he's not actually played that many games, but he's played some big games. But the other night, it took me actually a while to notice that James Forrest wasn't playing. The way that we set up, I thought the scoreline really flattered.
I think for some reason there's a little groundswell of opinion that James Forrest isn't much of a player. I think it's very unfortunate for Forrest, because he's been fantastically successful with Celtic and made a major contribution. And I've always said that people will not appreciate Forrest until his time at Celtic is over. So I think that is a little harsh.
But people take them for granted.
Yeah.
James Forrest, for the last 2.5, if not 3 years, has been arguably Celtic's most consistent performer. Oh. 17 goals in all competitions last year. Forget he's got 8 already this season. Just because he's not firing week in, week out, as soon as he's out the team, I genuinely think Celtic are a less dynamic.
And with regard to Griffith, it's been a help to him that Celtic have played Partick Thistle, Kilmarnock, Ross County tomorrow. It's allowed him, I think, to come back and be able to do what he has done. 2 games, 2 goals. And Neil Lennon has been able to change his shape to accommodate Lee Griffiths and Odson Edouard. But that might not necessarily be the case going forward.
Lee Griffiths can make that decision easier for Neil Lennon if he stays in the team and keeps scoring. Yeah. Selfishly, Lee Griffiths with 10-15 starts, 10-15 goals, suddenly becomes a real option again for Scotland. Gordon Strachan was in our office yesterday, and the whole kind of Lee Griffiths debate, there's a misconception about Lee, and you know, reinforced by the kind of tape gate or bin gate, whatever you want to call it. On international duty, he's one of the quietest, most polite people you could ever wish to meet. Somebody who's gone through some obvious and confronted mental health challenges, but somebody who's at the peak of his, or should be at the peak of his career age-wise. The dilemma for Lee Griffiths needs to be fully fit in order to do himself justice, but can't get himself fully match fit because Odson Edouard's in front of him. So it's a vicious kind of circle that Tom Rogic has found himself in. If you've got Tom Rogic at 100% physical capacity, you put him in the team every week. I think Neil Lennon's challenge is to try and get Lee Griffiths to be the best version of himself, and then it becomes undroppable.
Just to finish off, Paul, I mean, Ross County at home, does that fall into the routine bracket? And I don't mean to sound disrespectful to Ross County, that's just a credit to the way Celtic and Rangers have been going about their business at home this season.
Well, it should do. It should be. We should be able to rack a few goals up. This is where the goal difference comes in. I mean, I think playing games at Celtic Park should make a big difference. The big park seems to give us a wee bit more freedom, and I'd be looking for a healthy scoreline. I don't want to say we're going to win 10-0 or anything, but I would be looking to back a few goals up.
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. We're on air at 2 o'clock. Got some fantastic games, so we'd love it for you all to join us. Thank you to Paul on the line. Now, tonight's question from Stephen Ballmer is this: since 1987, players have scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals. Can you name them? You can so far. You're doing well. George McCluskey, Ian Ferguson for St Mirren, Stevie Kirk for Motherwell.
Mark McGee scored against Celtic
and against Rangers. He's the one that's done it twice.
Can't believe he's taking credit for that.
Did you go and help him and he's just shameless?
Honestly, and a lift up the road.
For what it's worth, I did just see Darryl Broadfoot leave his mic position. He walked over. People are always surprised that we don't sit in here, we stand. Darryl walked over, whispered something in Hugh's ear, and Hugh has just shamelessly.
But you see, I put flesh on the bones. He just gave you a name. I gave you the cup context. Final in which he did
it. 50% of the context.
Right, you've got 3 to get, and we'll get them next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the league leader for compensation. Talk to Thompson's.com.
We're into the final parts of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Hugh Keevans and Darryl Broadfoot are here. It's Dunfermline 2, Dundee 0, 5 minutes before the break, and it's the Pars goal machine, Kevin Nisbet. And what a goal it was, Hugh Keevans. Yeah. It's a long old weekend. We've got games on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But when you give us your goal of the weekend on Monday night, I'm pretty sure you'll be considering Kevin Nisbet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's picked up the ball, a defensive mistake by Dundee, but he's picked up the ball nearer the halfway line than the goal line. He's careered forward, and the finish is a pass into the net, real class. And the guy scores so many goals that you've got to think that somebody is having a look at a young man that's that prolific.
He's a real talent. 21 goals for the season so far.
Yeah. Top scoring Scotsman of 2019 he was as well. So he's one to keep an eye on. Kevin Nisbet at Dunfermline. Fantastic goal from him. Dunfermline 2, Dundee 0. Right, how are we getting on with this teaser? Since 1980. Your lift home depends on this. Since 1980, seven players have scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals. You've got George McCluskey in 1980. Moving forward, you've got Mark McGee, who did it twice. You've got Ian Ferguson and Stevie Kirk. So you've got three other players still to get.
Is there another Aberdeen in there? Give us a clue.
Oh yes.
Oh, so that now we're on.
Very much so.
Ian Jess.
No.
No.
Scott Booth.
No.
Earlier. Alec McLeish.
No.
Or right era.
Yes.
John Hewitt.
No.
Eric Black.
Yes.
There we go.
1-0 against Rangers. That was the 83, I think. Eric Black. Two
is that the
to get.
Fergie, Miller and McLeish. One is the cup.
Two to get. Still time to get them. Let's look at some of the other stories doing the rounds. Let's hear from Partick Thistle boss Ian McCall. He says it was time for Kenny Miller to leave. It wouldn't have benefited him sitting on the Jags bench. He has been a regular at Firhill this season, but he's moved on. And Thistle signed Brian Graham yesterday as well. Zach Rudden leading the line also. It was always going to mean less game time for Kenny Miller.
Spoke to him yesterday, and it was one or two wee things, but he was, I think he really appreciated how I did it. I hope he did. He's been not a minute's problem. He's been excellent in training and stuff, and you know, he's maybe going to, I never spoke to Kenny about his future plans, so you know, he's doing a lot in the media. Whether he'll want to continue playing, I would imagine he will, because he's still fit enough. So he leaves with his best with our best wishes, and he's a top scorer, so it wasn't an easy one to do. You know, I don't think there's a worth in Kenny maybe going down to the bench here, you know, so I think that was the main driver of it.
I suppose you're hoping that his goals can be replaced with Brian Graham.
I hope so. Time will tell on that. Hopefully Graham and Rudden can get on the score sheet sooner rather than later.
It's an interesting one, because not many clubs would quite willingly part company with their top scorer during the January window, but clearly Ian McCall sees something in the two guys that he's brought in.
Yeah.
To suggest that overall that's going to have a more positive impact.
They're away to Arbroath tomorrow, and with Barjonas from Rangers, Lee O'Connor from Celtic, Brian Graham brought in, Zach Rudden brought in the space of a week, he's really revamped things, Ian McCall. And I think he has done the right thing by Kenny Miller, and Kenny Miller has done the right thing by him. There's no shouting and bawling, amicable, and the younger legs will need to get Partick Thistle away from the bottom, Darryl.
Makes sense. I think Ian McCall was probably even surprised by the extent of the job, having gone from the top end of the table to the bottom to go back to his first love. But first sign of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. He's now got goals, he's got youth. I think that was a humbling result against Dundee United at Firhill, and he had to do something drastic. This is it.
Yeah, and I mean, that game tomorrow, Hugh, they're all big down at that section of the championship, but Thistle Trail are both by 3 points. There's a chance to draw level, obviously. Your arithmetic doesn't have to be razor sharp to work that out. But it's another one, and we said weeks ago now that, you know, we're not even close to the beginning of the season. We're in the new year, that the business end is probably not quite upon us yet. That comes a few weeks away before people start throwing that title at it. But you've got to just start picking up points very soon.
To bring in Barjonas, O'Connor, Rudden and Graham, that's something that Dick Campbell at Arbroath couldn't even begin to think about doing. So this has to come good for Partick Thistle tomorrow at Gayfield. It has to start right now. And with those players on board, it would be worrying for Ian McCall if it didn't start tomorrow at Arbroath.
That said, though, Craig Whiting, well. Craig Whiting to Arbroath. So there's some interesting business being done everywhere.
10 points separate bottom table Alloa and third placed Ayr United. So from Partick Thistle's perspective, 2 wins takes them up to mid table, 3-4 wins takes them up to the top 3. That's how wonderfully mad the championship is.
Motherwell Hibs looks like a good fixture, Hugh. You've got Motherwell, who strengthened their grip on third place with that victory at Pittodrie, a Motherwell side who clearly have been good more often than not, because that's the reason they're third. But you know, they've slipped up a couple of times at home. They lost the previous meeting between the sides. Jack Ross just struggling for a bit of consistency with Hibs at the moment.
Yeah, but they went a goal down against Hamilton midweek, and you're thinking, well, for Brian Rice, it's been an emotional week. What a terrific result that would be for him. But then Hibs refused to be out of it, and they got the points in the end. And Martin Boyle watched again by Celtic. The window getting close to the end. It could be a very interesting last few days of the window, but that for me, Motherwell Hibs, is probably the game of the day tomorrow.
I was going to say that, game of the day, possibly high scoring as well. Hibernian can concede as much as they can come back and score two or three. Motherwell's form has been terrific. They are the team chasing at the head of the other league that I'd mentioned. So yeah, I think they'll be a cracker.
We'll surely get stuck into Hearts against Rangers build up tomorrow. St Mirren Aberdeen, we have to wait until Sunday for that one, Hugh. Bad news for Saints fans today. Kyle McGuinness is going to miss the rest of the season with a cruciate ligament injury. So Jim Goodwin, understandably disappointed to lose such an influential player.
Yeah, but I think you have to do whatever you can. Now, you can't go parking the bus at home against Aberdeen. You have to prey on Aberdeen's you can argue whether vulnerability is too strong a word or not, but they struggled last weekend against Jim Duffy's part-time Dumbarton. Got there with a penalty, and they lost at home Wednesday night to Motherwell. So St Mirren have to try and take advantage of Aberdeen not being in a good place.
Okay, let's leave it there, because you've still got work to do on the full time teaser. One last read of the question. Since 1980, seven players have scored extra time goals in Scottish Cup finals: George McCluskey, Mark McGee twice, Eric Black, Ian Ferguson and Stevie Kirk. You have five down and two to go.
Rudy Scatchell?
No, way before that. You've done the hard work. You have identified the club. You've identified the era. You just need to fill in a couple more blanks. I mean, high profile teammates of some of the guys you've mentioned. You've mentioned Mark McGee. You've mentioned Eric Black. Who have you not mentioned?
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Who have you not mentioned, Darryl Broadfoot?
In all of them.
You specifically.
Me?
You know Gordon this guy Strachan. Pretty well, Gordon Strachan.
Wow.
And his who's their other teammate? McGee.
Willie Miller.
Nope. Oh. Hugh Keevans has got a really childish way of doing this. He likes to finish with initials. I tell him the initials and he tries to fill it, and you'll get it. You
I'm
ready?
Not childish.
N.C.
Neil Cooper.
Oh, nearly. Big tatty.
Neil Cooper. Thank you very much, Hugh Keevans and Daryl Broadfoot. As always though, the biggest thanks goes to you. Thank you for all your calls and tweets, and for keeping us company on this Friday night. We are back tomorrow. Brilliant football to look forward to. We're here at 2 o'clock. We'd love for you to join us, and in the meantime, your weekend can truly get started. GBX Friday's up next.
One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompson's.com.